are going to be looking at a passage from John chapter 16 today. This is Jesus telling his disciples about his death and his resurrection that is to come. And it is a really interesting, I think there's some really good applications here as you look at this text, especially as it pertains to Easter Sunday. So we're going to start in verse 19 of John chapter 16. Jesus knew that they wished to question him, and he said to them, "Are you deliberating together about this, that I said, 'A little while and you will not see me, and again, a little while and you will see me'?" Now, I want to ask you a question this morning as we look at this text. How many of you have ever felt like you had no idea what God's plan was? Now, there are two kinds of people. There are the people who admit they don't know what God's plan is, and there are the people who have never actually even thought about it. That's about it. Because I feel like this frequently, and I have a saying I tell people all the time. There are two things I know about God. Number one, he has a plan, and number two, he almost never tells me what it is. And that tends to be the way it works. Now, here's what's funny. After the plan unfolds, how many of you could look back at your life now at a time when you didn't know what God was doing, and now you can look back at it and go, "Oh, he knew exactly what he was doing. I didn't know what he was doing at the time, but now it makes perfect sense." When we read about the disciples and their interaction with Jesus, and especially if you've watched The Chosen, you get a really good sense of this. The frustration that they don't know what he's talking about. Everything's very veiled, and there's a lot of metaphor, and they don't know what's metaphor and what's real. And they're frustrated because they don't understand what he's saying. And he seems frustrated because they don't get it. And I wonder sometimes how often God looks at us and goes, "How plain do I have to make it?" Because we just don't get it. And I so sympathize with the disciples here because I have been at this place in my life before where I feel like God's trying to tell me something and I'm not getting it. Now, sometimes maybe I'm not getting it because I don't like what he's telling me. Has that ever happened to anybody? Did any of you when you were kids ever walk out of a room while your parents were talking to you and pretend you didn't hear them? Any of you ever do that? There's no way I'm the only person that did that. I know Gwen Baker did it. Gwen still does it. I feel like Gwen probably still does that. I would do that. I would walk out of the room and mom would still be talking. And then later I'd be like, "Oh, I didn't even hear you." You know, by the way, it was a dangerous game to play with Fran. I'll just go ahead and tell you, it's a dangerous game to play with Fran. But sometimes I feel like maybe that's what we do. It's like we don't like what God's telling us, so we act like we don't understand. And by the way, they clearly don't like this talk. But I do think there's some real life application here in that we do sometimes feel incredibly frustrated because what is happening, we don't understand. And I think right now we live in a time where it's like, what is going on? What is happening in the world right now? What is God doing? Why is he letting this happen? Why has he turned these people loose? You know, and it's just, there's a lot of questions and it creates a lot of doubt. And I totally get this feeling that they have. And Jesus looks at them and he goes, are you guys debating this? Are you deliberating what I said? In a little while you'll see me, and then again in a little while, I mean, you won't see me and then you will see me. And they are completely baffled by this. And if you were at the sunrise service this morning, you heard Winfred talking about trust. That was one of the themes of his part of talking about rest. The ability to trust. How many of you struggle trusting when someone else is in charge? Now, a lot of us probably are more like this than we like to admit. it's, you know, and I joke with my wife all the time, because when I'm driving, she's very nervous. She gets very nervous while I'm driving. Now, whenever we go somewhere, I drive. Like 99% of the time we go somewhere, I drive. Who can guess why I drive? Because I don't like riding with someone else when they're driving. And if you've ever been in a car with somebody who doesn't drive the way you think they should drive, ooh, that's not fun. So some of us probably can identify with this idea that we do not like when we're not in control, especially when it comes to our life. And one of the things, I think one of the fundamentally most difficult things any Christian ever has to learn to do is to turn control over to God. Now, it's easy to say you're going to do that. It's easy to think you're going to do that. But when push comes to shove, it's hard to do. And these disciples, that they have traveled with Jesus for 3 years, and you would think by now they would just be like, well, you know, whatever, Jesus, it's what you say, that's fine. But that is not a natural thing. It's just not a natural thing to be able to turn over authority and control to someone else. So Jesus now is questioning them. What are you deliberating? What's going on? And then in verse 20, he says this, truly, truly, I say to you that you will weep and lament, but the world will rejoice. You will grieve, but your grief will be turned into joy. Okay. Does this sound like the world you live in right now? That everything that God tells us and everything that we do based on His word, the world ridicules. They ridicule it. They make fun of it. They make fun of us. They think we're crazy. They think we're old fashioned. They think, you know, we're out of touch. You hear that stuff all the time. And Jesus told his disciples 2,000 years ago, this is how it's going to be. He says, I'm telling you, you're going to weep and lament, and the world's going to rejoice. Now, why would the world rejoice at the death of Jesus? Because he's a troublemaker, right? He's a blasphemer. The Jews were convinced that he was a blasphemer and that he needed to die. The Romans saw him as a potential rebel that could try to overthrow Roman rule in Jerusalem, and that made him a problem for the Romans. And so everybody had a reason to see Jesus gone. And Jesus said, when this happens, you guys are going to weep and lament, but the world is going to rejoice. You guys are going to grieve, but now here's the key part of this. You're going to grieve, but your grief is going to turn to joy. How many of you have trouble waiting for something that has been promised to you? When I was a kid, the longest month of the year was December. December went for about 130 days when I was a kid. And by the way, the closer Christmas got, the longer the days got. Any of you remember that? Any of you remember being under the belief that when you turned 16, you were going to get a car? You remember how long it felt like you were 15? 7 years. 15 was the longest year. By the way, 15 was the longest year until you were 17. Because when you were 17, when you turned 18, you could vote, because that's what every 17-year-old wants to do. When I was a kid, 18 was the drinking age. And then, when I was 17, they changed it to 21, which made being 17 actually take 4 years. And then I was in Bible college where we weren't allowed to drink anyway, so it didn't really matter. But when we have this anticipation of something that's coming up and we get really excited about it, it feels like time just drags on forever. And when we are in a difficult period of life, the word that a lot of people use now is season. That's not really one of my go-to words, but it's an appropriate word, I guess. When you're in a difficult season, it feels like it drags on forever, doesn't it? When Caleb got sick, I remember one of the doctors said, you know, with encephalitis, he said, this is going to be a long journey for you guys. We didn't know what that meant. If you had asked me in 2016 if I believed it would take 9 years to get where Caleb was not having seizures, I'd have told you, oh, that won't take that long. 9 years. And that season felt like it drug forever. And in that season, there was a lot of not understanding what the plan was. It's like, okay, everybody. And by the way, you know what is really entertaining? When you're going through that, and people like to tell you that God has a plan. Has that ever happened to you? Where you're going through something, and people look at you and go, God's got a plan. And then you're like, well, what is it? I don't know. But people like to say that, right? By the way, how many of you have ever said that to somebody? You've gone to somebody and said, oh, don't worry, God's got a plan. And that's true. But when you don't know what the plan is that always a lot of comfort? No, not really. And so we go through these periods of life where maybe it's a family problem, or maybe it's a problem with work, or maybe it's a financial problem, or maybe it's a health issue, but you're going through some difficult time and you don't know what God's plan is, and it feels like it's dragging forever. And you're like, when is this ever going to end? Where is the light at the end of this, at the end of this tunnel? When is it going to happen? And God tells these guys, Jesus tells these guys, he says, look, this is going to be hard. You're going to suffer. And here's the worst part. While you're suffering, everyone around you is going to be rejoicing. They're going to be thrilled. He said, but here's the promise. He said, here's the promise. You will grieve, but your grief will be turned into joy. Now, let me ask you a question. When is your grief going to be turned into joy? In God's time. Jim, that's such a preacher answer. Jim. All right. It's going to happen in God's time. How many of you know what God's time is? Nope. So here's the problem, right? We have to wait for it. Two important things. Number one, we have to wait for it. Number two, we have to trust that it's going to happen. Now, here's the tricky part. Is the guarantee that it's going to happen in this life? No. No. There's not a guarantee it's going to happen in this life. Now, maybe for some of us it will. Maybe we will come out of that dark time, that difficulty, and we'll come out of that, and we'll have a time of, as we talked about this morning, a time of rest, a time of renewal after our difficult struggle. Or maybe the grief will be turned into joy when we go to be with God. Okay, next verse, please. So in verse 21, I love this analogy. I just love that Jesus uses this analogy. Especially since the Father punished Eve by doing this. Whenever a woman is in labor, she has pain because her hour has come. But when she gives birth to the child, she no longer remembers the anguish because of the joy that a child has been born into the world. Is that true, Lynette? I stood in the labor and delivery room with my wife when she was in labor with Caleb. And I was 100% sure that he would be an only child. I said, there is no scenario where she is going to do this again. There is no way. There is no way she's doing this again. And you know how I know that? Because she almost broke my hand. And she looked at me and she said mean things to me during labor about it being my fault and just trying to break my hand. And I thought, yeah, we're going to be one and done. And then it's like, it wasn't like 8 months later. She's like, so when are we going to have, you know, another one? And I was like, what? Are you serious? And she's like, oh, yeah. I said, but you said you were, how much it hurt. She goes, oh, no, it's fine. By the way, any of you who have had kids, is that how you remember it? Yeah. There may be some people here with one going, nope, that's not how it happened at my place. My place is like, nope, we're one and we're done. But Jesus, I mean, I love that he uses this analogy because the whole reason you have pain in childbirth is because of Eve and her sin in the garden. But now Jesus uses this analogy, and it's a great analogy, right? We go through pain, and we go through it and we're like, this is the worst thing ever. But then after a time, the anguish kind of clears and we look at the blessing. And that's a real thing that a lot of people in this room could probably attest to. They're like, yeah, I get it. I understand what Jesus is saying here. Do you believe whatever you're dealing with right now? And this is a super important question. Do you believe whatever difficulty you are dealing with right now, you will consider worthwhile when you stand in the presence of God? That's an important question. Because a lot of times that question really defines whether we are in Christ or not. And most of us in this room have probably never been seriously challenged on that front. For the Easter holiday, a lot of times different Christian organizations from around the world will post things about people who have been martyred, and they'll put that stuff out there. And I was reading an article a few days ago about these guys. I think it was Algeria, where 21 Christian men were arrested. And they were marched down to the beach and they were beheaded. And one by one, the radical Islamist who executed them, one by one would walk up to them and give them an opportunity to renounce their faith. And when the guy would say, no, I'm not renouncing Christ, they would take this sword and just the head comes off. And imagine you're the next guy in line. And you're like, wow, they're serious. You know, and you start to wonder, you know, you start to wonder, what would I do if I was in that situation? Jesus says, look, you're going to go through some pain. You know, that's part of this. But when it's over, you're going to rejoice when the anguish is gone. Because of what has transpired in the case of labor, it's because that baby's born and now you forget about all the anguish because you are now seeing that child. And in this context, the reality is when we stand before God, we're not going to remember all of the difficulties that we faced in this world. But when we're facing them, that is hard to remember, isn't it? It is hard to remember. Kind of like when you're 9 months plus a couple of days. I remember we went to the doctor because Stephanie was having contractions, and we go to the doctor, and they said it was false labor. But they said, here's what you do. Go take a lap around the hospital. Just walk around the hospital a few times. Okay? So we start walking up and down the halls, which I thought was a really bad idea, because like, what if I get way down one of these halls and then she starts having the baby? Because the doctor wasn't walking with me. So I thought that was a terrible idea. Good news is it didn't work. Then the nurse gave me this nugget of information. Do you live near a farm? I said, well, there's some farms out where we live, out in Winterville. There's some farms out there. Go get in the car and drive through somebody's field over the rows and it'll bump. And I went, do you have a degree? I mean, is this like a, are you certified? Is this a real thing? It's like, I felt like I was on Green Acres. I was like, what is going? But I tell you, in those times when Stephanie was 9 months pregnant, and those of you who have been there, you know, that is a miserable, it's like, and I just remember Stephanie looking at me one morning going, I'm ready for this thing to be out of here. Wasn't my child, it was this thing. Ready for it to go. But when she was holding Caleb in the hospital, everything changed. And Sam, I'm talking about Caleb because he was first. Sam, she would have had another one after you too, Sam. I'm sure of it. Not me. But that is the nature of this life, that we go through these difficulties and we think about everything that happens in this life and how difficult it is and how troubling it can be sometimes. And yet the promise that we have is that when we finally receive that reward, we won't think about that anymore. Verse 22, he says, therefore, you too have grief now, but I will see you again. And your heart will rejoice, and no one will take your joy away from you. Do any of you know any people who seems like their life's effort is to make you miserable? It just feels like, you know, their job is to suck the fun out of any room they walk into. It's like they always have a negative attitude, and everything they say and do is negative. And it's like you encounter these people who just, it's almost like their purpose in life is to make sure you're miserable. Any of you ever been around somebody like that? By the way, if you're married to one, don't look at them right now. I don't want to do marriage counseling on Easter Sunday, okay? I don't want to do any marriage counseling on Easter Sunday. But we all know those people, okay? That is the world in relation to your relationship with Jesus. The world takes no comfort in your relationship with God. They think it's frivolous. They think it's ridiculous. They don't think it makes any sense. They think it's based on fiction, and they think it's crazy, and they don't understand it. And the reality is, most of them never will. And it seems like that there are people in the world whose express goal in life is to try to make Christians feel bad about their faith and about their relationship with God. Jesus said, guys, you're going to be surrounded by these people. Peter, John, James, Andrew, Matthew, all of you, you guys, you're going to be surrounded by these people, okay? And they're going to want to take away from you the joy that comes from your relationship with God. But Jesus says this is the promise. He said, your heart will rejoice and no one will take your joy away. I want to close this morning with something that's really important. And this is not just a thought for Easter. It's really for any time. Your joy in your relationship with God is not for sale. Stop giving it away to people. We have a really bad habit about letting people live rent-free in our heads for no particular reason. I have a saying. It's gotten me in trouble a couple of times, but I think it has some value. The opinions of people that don't matter to you shouldn't affect you. Okay? When someone who's not a Christian wants to talk to me about how stupid my faith is, you know what their opinion means to me? Nothing. It doesn't matter to me at all. I couldn't care less what they think. You know why I don't care what they think? Because their opinion has no value because they don't know God. And so when any time that if I'm engaged with somebody in a conversation or online, or if someone comes to me and wants to talk to me about faith and they take that direction, I'm like, well, you're entitled to your opinion, but your opinion really doesn't impact me. My joy is not for sale. Okay? You're not entitled to take my joy away from me. You can't take it from me. You know what I have to do? I have to give it away. Because the joy that comes for Christ cannot be taken. And you see a lot of Christians who dwell in misery, and it's like, well, I'm not in a good place. I'm not happy in my relationship with God. No, nobody took that joy from them. They gave it away. You let someone take it. Because the joy that comes in Christ is yours. And Jesus says it can't be taken away from us. We can choose to let someone have it, but it can't be taken. And so what I would like to do this morning, as the praise team comes to lead us in our communion song, I would like to challenge you to be steadfast in the joy you have with Christ and not let other people mess with that. Don't give them permission to mess up your joy. Your joy in your relationship with Christ and the salvation that comes with that should never, ever be at the discretion of another person. It's between you and the Father, and you should be steadfast in that.